Hello and welcome to another English edition of my podcast Helium Talk, das Kunstgespräch. My name is Jörg Heikaus and my guest in this episode is Martin Nielsen. Well, he wasn't really my guest because I visited him. Last month, I went up to the North Art Fair in Aalborg, Denmark. We showed a bunch of our artists up there with Helium Cowboy, but I also took my recording equipment with me to speak with Martin Nielsen, who is one of the most prestigious art collectors in Denmark. I met with Martin at his office, which is full with amazing art by a number of mostly very famous people from all around the world. He's got impressive works by the likes of Thalea, Jonathan Mese, Georg Baselitz and many more. His collection spans a huge variety of art and media and also includes graffiti and urban masters, for example painter El Mac or the iconic Date Farmers. Well, with over 500 works in his collection, it would be impossible to describe it comprehensively in this short introduction, but we do try and cover it in this podcast. I had the great privilege of getting a personal tour by Martin of the beautiful art that surrounds him in two of his office buildings that afternoon. And I must say, you can feel his deep passion in every corner of the rooms, because it is not just about owning the art, but also about how you install and live with it. I hope you enjoy this special Helium Talk, the first one ever recorded outside of my studio. As always, I'm looking forward to your feedback by mail at heliumtalk@heliumcowboy.com or any of the other channels where you can reach out to me.
Helium Talk. Helium Talk.
Is this the only place where you got your art? Probably not.
No, this is just my office.
Yeah. So the collection is where? Is it at your home? Is it here in your office? Do you have a permanent, steady?
It's basically everywhere I go. It's in my different offices. It's in my private home.
Yeah.
It's with my sons. I have rented something out for friends. Mm-hmm. It's in my storage. It's just art is just surrounding me everywhere.
It's everywhere, yeah. Well, it's that's probably how it should be. But you started collecting, I read about you, I think you started collecting when you were 25 or later.
Yeah, I was like, something like that. My first piece I ever bought was in 1994.
Okay. So, and that basically started the interest.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
it didn't start as an interest, basically. It mm-hmm. just started as a need. Okay. I have a new house and I need something for the walls, and it actually went from there. Yeah. And it didn't take long, basically, before it was something else, something I had a certain feeling about things.
So when you buy art, you do it by instinct, or, the first works were probably something you just liked and felt that fits.
Yeah, and it's still the same.
Yeah, still the same. So. Yeah. You're going to a lot around to galleries and fairs to check out?
Yes. I'm a lot on the internet. Yeah. I'm pretty busy with my job, so it doesn't always allow me to travel where I want to travel. Okay. But I try to get to one of the Basel fairs every year, so either Hong Kong, Basel, or Miami, and then many times to the art fair in or the gallery weekend in Berlin. I think there's a lot of interesting things there.
That's true, huh?
Also, even the art week in Copenhagen is getting more and more interesting and more exciting. So I'm trying to be a little bit around. And of course, I have good contact with really many artists and many, many galleries who are sending me them all the new exhibition shows and so on.
So you just said your business doesn't allow you to travel where you want to go. What's your business?
I'm into a little bit different things. I have a very big real estate project coming up. Where I'm
Cloud building. City Aalborg or something?
Yeah, Cloud City Aalborg, which is like a culture and art city within the city, so which I have spent the last 4.5 years doing and would spend another 3.5 years completing. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty interesting. And I'm also into clothing. I'm the importer for Scandinavia for Paul Smith, designer brand. So yeah, that's basically what I'm doing. And then the rest of my time I spend on my family and on my art.
Yeah, okay, well, that's... I'm glad you said family before art.
Yeah.
But, yeah. But yes, I am. I've going around here, I've seen... You just saw me in a, showed me a new piece by, you said, an Iranian artist.
Yeah.
How do you find these artists?
I mean, actually, this was pretty funny because I felt all his work on Instagram, mm-hmm. actually. Saw him many different places on Instagram, on different mm-hmm. on different platforms. And then one of my friends, I met him actually at the art fair in Copenhagen. I said, Klaus, what's going on? He's also a collector. I said, I something new coming up. Yeah, I found this Iranian artist. He's amazing. He's working mm-hmm. with hair. I mean, hair. I mean, is this guy? And I showed him, yeah, that's him. And then he got into connection with him. So because he doesn't have mm-hmm. any gallery in Europe,
yeah.
actually, the payment have to go through a friend of him because you cannot send money to Iran. So, you know, it's a little bit tricky. But his art is amazing and it's fresh and it's different and it's telling and yeah, so why not?
Yeah, well, but that's interesting you say that you found him through Instagram. So like when you say online, you find a lot online, is that your first source or you go on Artsy and all these pages or?
I actually don't use, I use Artsy a little bit mm-hmm. and also there are a Danish app mm-hmm. Called Art Planet. What was it called? 1 second. All right.
Yeah,
it's Friday. It's been a long week.
That's okay.
Artland.
Artland, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I use Artland a little bit and Artsy a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But many other different connections as well.
Yeah, yeah. You just find it, you know. Yeah, I think it's important that artists have good representation online. I'm still a true believer that every artist should also have a website because it's more thorough than Instagram and all these things. Yeah. You know, you can go there and visit that, but. I don't know, younger artists, the younger generation of artists doesn't even have websites anymore. They're just on Instagram probably mostly.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you find them this way, then it's, you know, it's all good and it kind of works.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit more about your collection. I mean, there's probably not a red line that goes through it. As we say, you know, sort of it's like many different artists. And genres and works, is there anything they have in common, like an era, time? Are they all alive still, or
there's absolutely nothing?
Okay,
you can say there's a red line or red thread through the collection. I mean, basically, my collector strategy is not to have one.
Mm-hmm.
I allow myself in 98% of my buy mm-hmm. just to get carried away.
Mm-hmm.
From an artist, from a work, from a certain quality, mm-hmm. from a certain perspective, from a certain idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I fall for many different crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's really not really crazy because it's super minimal.
Mm-hmm.
I like Saga Jensen. I have works for him. They're basically white. Mm-hmm. You know, you nearly can't see anything on it.
Mm-hmm.
I like Talar, which is completely amazing with colors.
Yeah.
I like George Basilitz, mm-hmm. which is completely super strong. I mean, I like Tony Martelli, many, many, many others.
Yeah.
And there's no guideline for me. I simply just try to feel how my breathing are. If my mm-hmm. if my pulse goes up,
mm-hmm.
probably I need to buy the piece. And
yeah.
and then for a few percentage, if you buy really expensive pieces,
mm-hmm.
you need also to use your brain a little bit. Can this actually be a good investment?
Mm-hmm.
Because you cannot spend 200,000, 300,000, 400,000, 500,000 euros
mm-hmm.
and just put money down a drain. You have to be a little bit certain about that.
Yeah.
And normally I do that. I normally you go to art price and check a little bit how is that development on this specific artist and so on. And if it looks okay, I mean I can still jump into it. But that's the 2-3%. For the rest, it's simply just heart and heart and more heart.
Yeah, it's what I tell clients, guests, visitors of our gallery all the time. That it's just like you cannot buy because it is going to be a good investment. I think, of course, if you spend like 300,000-400,000 euros, it's an investment, and you have to make sure that it's a smart investment.
Yeah.
But especially, I mean, we're working with younger artists or mid-career artists. And all I can say to people is, I mean, you know, so if you want to buy the work or you want to buy into selling it at some point, because yeah. When I buy an artwork, I don't think about selling it at all. And even if you want to sell it at a certain point in time, there has to be a secondary market for it. And most of the artists that we're representing, they don't have a secondary market.
No.
It's very hard to find somebody to buy a piece. Even though the works are great and the artists are doing well and they can live off it and they have big shows, it doesn't mean that you find somebody else who wants to buy that piece at a higher price. you know. So, yeah.
So that's why I basically people ask, how do you test mm-hmm. the art? And I normally test it in this way before I buy things. And okay, would I really buy this piece mm-hmm. if that was 100 euros? Because just because it's 100,000 euros doesn't make it great. Mm-hmm. So is it great by itself? Yeah. Or is it just great by expectations because other people decided to make it expensive? So that's what I call the Martin test. Mm-hmm. Okay, so if I believe that yeah. I can't live without this piece, if it's a 100 euro piece, I'm going to buy it.
Yeah.
Even if it's 1 million euro piece. Yeah. You know, it's not the test. The test is not how expensive, it's how cheap.
Yeah, yeah. How much you want it.
Yeah.
You know, and you need
yeah.
it. You know?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so I also saw you have Almac here, so a little bit in the urban art era. You also have an Almac outside on the office wall here, right?
Yeah.
Aalborg itself, for me, is a city that actually it's not very big, but you have a lot of great graffiti in the street. I mean, like public murals, not necessarily illegal graffiti. I think Berlin and Hamburg are stronger in that part, but in terms of like you know public mural work, it's pretty nice. Would you say that Aalborg is important in that respect in Denmark, regards to art? Because I mean, you have an art fair now, and you have all these things. Why is Aalborg so the center of art in?
I don't know what I don't want to say. It's the center of art in Denmark. I do want to say it is Aalborg is a small size city.
Yeah.
But we do a lot of things our own way. We are not looking to be a copy of Aarhus or Copenhagen. We want to be ourselves and we want to take our own steps to be different and to be a unique city. Mm-hmm. And some of those, that uniqueness come through art or through culture. Mm-hmm. And we have spent a lot of energy and a lot of money within the municipality and within the different people, the galleries and everybody, to try to make this city more interesting. It was an old work city, industrial city, mm-hmm. with three or four big factories for different things, and they're all closed now. So, I mean, we have to get a new identity, and why not art and culture? That's actually why I, in the first place, decided to work on my Cloud City project. Mm-hmm. That other people have done stuff. I'm just doing it even wilder, you know, but I'm leaning on other people's shoulders or standing on other people's shoulders in relation to that. And mirrors is a great story. I mean, when I want to paint my elevator shaft here with Elmac, the municipality, the guy who's sitting there, you know, small guy, I said, "No, you can't do that." And I go, "Why?" And, but I don't like it. Mm-hmm. And I say, "But you know, there's no law against it. So tell me why there's no law against it. There's not really a law against it, mm-hmm. but I don't like it." Okay, that's your problem. And then I had it tested with his superiors, and then I said, "Martin, it's a great idea. Do it." Mm-hmm. And 6 months after, the municipality came out with a catalog of all Aalborg.
Yeah.
And my mirrors from Elmac was, of course, there. You know, it's one of as some, you know, super. So it's just about wanting to change things, mm-hmm. you know, and just, you know, and you don't sleep before you succeed. And I think that's important. Just, no, it's not necessarily no, it's just people don't know anything about. A lot of people don't know about art.
Yeah.
And many people do believe they have to understand art, mm-hmm. Understanding art is not a necessity. What is important is that you open your heart for art mm-hmm. and let it take you someplace. And some art doesn't take you anywhere. Mm-hmm. That means that's not the kind of art your body likes. And then there will be other things where you will really, you can get the high pulse. You will have a certain amount of state of mind mm-hmm. when you look at that type of art. And then that's where you're going to go.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I think that's also a common misunderstanding about art, that people believe that they have to understand a lot about it, you know, and about the backgrounds. But then when you actually, I mean, there's you know catalogs and exhibition texts and everything that are usually quite you know sort of important to go along with the work, but. If, say, you go to an art fair, what's the history in that? You know, you have all these many artists, totally different artists, and the only people that can actually give you an explanation are the guys running the galleries and stuff like that. So the first impression you have is what you see.
Yeah.
And you don't talk about every artwork and about every artist with everyone. So I think that's very important that you stay, you know, sort of kind of a little bit disconnected from too much theory in the whole thing, you know.
Just take it in. I mean, it doesn't need to be understood. It's not about that. But if you think it's about that, you don't set yourself free in mm-hmm. front of the art, and that's, I think that's trouble.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the North Art Fair, which is currently on in Aalborg, so I think it's like 25 galleries or so that are taking part. It's a nice size. It's in a parking garage, which is exceptional, I think, for an art fair, you know. So it's a very good location. I already talked about this, but during setting up, we could drive with the van in front of the booth and set it up. But yesterday was the VIP preview or the pre-opening, and it was super crowded, and it was a very big intensity and passion for art. I think that from my perspective, coming from Germany and working a lot with the Danish gallery and with Danish people now, there is more passion in Denmark about art than there is in Germany, I'd say, even though we're probably the bigger art market in terms of we have more universities, more students, more artists and everything. What do you think? What's your explanation? Why? Because I find Danish people come to our gallery and they see work and then they're enthusiastic, and then if they like it, they buy it. German people usually stop at the part where they're enthusiastic and they don't buy it necessarily. It's a longer, and I don't think that Germans necessarily would buy it when they see something on the internet. We have online service as well with the gallery. We sell a lot online through Artsy and our website and stuff like that, but never to Germany, hardly ever to Germany, always just to other countries. What do you think? Why is that? Why do you think Danish people are more passionate also when it comes to investing into art?
I'm not so much into the what's happening in Germany, but what you can say, I think maybe what I know about Germans is that they have a little bit more the parades up. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if you have parades up against other people, you probably also have your parade up against art. Mm-hmm. So a little bit coming back to what I said before, if you're not allowing yourself to take it in, mm-hmm. you know, you're never going to get there. But you can also say that Denmark have not been a big art scene. It's something have come in the last 3, 4, 5, 6 years. Mm-hmm. Before that, we were pretty boring, German boring in mm-hmm. terms of art. Yeah, yeah. So the last 4, 5, 6 years have been actually mile jumps against a new world order in terms of how we look at art. Mm-hmm. And art are not just for the rich people anymore. Maybe it's still just for the rich people in Germany, you know, that the common people actually are interested in art. But they just to look at in museums or in galleries, and they're saying thank you very much, and they have a glass of wine and they go back. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think that will change. But I think it's very important that we take the drama mm-hmm. and all the exclusivity mm-hmm. out of art and just let art be art. Mm-hmm. And a little bit, if you look to your right, I have a small text over there, and it says art should comfort the disturbed. Mm-hmm. And disturb the comfortable.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just what you need. I mean, maybe the last part is not yet in place in Germany, and maybe that's actually what you need to shake a little bit the situation. Yeah. I do think that there are areas in Germany mm-hmm. where it's not like you say Berlin is exceptionally amazing in mm-hmm. terms of art scene, mm-hmm. both in terms of people coming there buying, but also in terms of the Germans.
Well, Berlin took a long time. You know, I think we have a very good art scene in Hamburg as well. I think, as I said, the interest is there, the artists are there, the galleries are there. There's even more and more galleries these past years than there were when the market was still existent. I think the market is just not really there, and Germans are very, very careful on where they spend their money, probably. But Berlin, it took a long time until people started buying art in Berlin. Yeah. I mean, went to Berlin when you said you started in 94, at a time when they still had the Berlin Art Fair, when they had that fair that went down because the collectors weren't coming.
No.
And only from people who live in the city, you cannot make a big thriving business out of an art fair. I mean, the key to success of large fairs is like what the Basel fairs do, with taking the fair to a very special place like Miami, and then bringing everybody there, you know, and that's I think the key to the success. You have to try and get people to get there. In Hamburg, I mean, we have a lot of tourists, of course, in Hamburg as well, but there's not necessarily art tourism.
No.
It's not a destination.
But Berlin is huge art tourism to Berlin. Yeah. And I think,
oh, yeah.
I mean, and I think Berlin have made it in terms of art.
Yeah.
And you can say also, for example, Rotterdam is coming up now on the scope in terms of a pretty good art fair. So and also a little bit smaller cities or smaller art fairs, Arco, for example, in Madrid. So there are coming things which actually make sense to look at.
Yeah.
And I'm going there, and I see many different people going to the little bit smaller fairs. But of course, Basel is... It's a big killer, of course, and it's very important for the whole world art scene that Basel is actually being this huge machine, huge driver of art on the world scene.
Is there any fair that you say you cannot miss, where you have to go to every year? Like that's
That's Basel.
Basel in Basel.
Not necessarily in Basel, but
it's
normally let's say. Two times in a row, I go to Basel. Mm-hmm. Then I normally take one time to Miami, and then this year I was in Hong Kong, and that was actually amazing, and I was actually much better than I expected.
Okay,
great feel, great buzz in the city, really really amazing, and a good selection of different galleries with very very different art. So I was pretty amazed about that, actually.
Do you still go to smaller art fairs, like so-called satellite fairs?
Yes. It can be free sometimes. It can be Rotterdam. Or just like more like gallery weekends. I love to be gallery weekends in Berlin. I think that's really nice. All the galleries are open, they have good shows. There's a great buzz. I mean, just all the buzz, you know, that feel, I think, is also important. And talk to other collectors, talk to the gallerist. And I think they're doing a great job there in that respect.
Yeah, so that's something that they were considering doing in Hamburg as well. I think in Cologne they also started this Love Cologne. Yeah. They started this also these weekends where all the galleries are open, and we're just starting small in Hamburg. Hamburg is a very, I think, is a very important town in regards to arts and culture, but it's more music and musicals and stuff that have taken over in the past years. But I mean, since I've started Helium Cowboy like 16 years ago, almost 16 years ago, there's been a lot of movement in the market, and the reason why I started this gallery was also because I wanted to take out the exclusivity. I wanted to have everybody coming in, and I didn't want to look at the CVs of artists. I just wanted to look at their art and what they're doing and how actually they are, you know, how much of the art is part of them, you know, and not just something they do for a few years. Because I think that's one thing as a gallerist where you have a responsibility towards both sides, the artist and the clients that buy, that you look into these artists not as a thing for a few years, but people that are building their career and lives around it. And that's also one of the reasons why I'm doing this podcast, or a nice aspect of this podcast. A lot of artists are actually listening to this podcast, because there's a certain kind of exchange, you know, they are curious to know where do my works end up. And of course, not all of the works end up in like your collection. There's actually so many people that I know that have collections, and the collection for me starts at, I don't know, say three works. I don't know when a collection starts for you, but that's kind of if you bought first, and then you fell in love, you've done the first step and then you fell in love with the second one. And then when you come back, you know, you're already there, you're already addicted, you know. Yeah. It might still only be 15 paintings in your whole life or 15 artworks, but to me, that's a collection.
Yeah. Yeah, but this, I mean, I don't look at it that way. For me, I'm not here to make a collection. Mm-hmm. I'm just here, and when I get impressed about something and some kind of works, and it gives me a certain feeling, I buy it. It's not like now I completed my collection, because it will never be complete.
No.
I spoke to a collector from Munich. I think Munich. His name was Herbert. He actually made a book of his collection. And I love the title of that book, because it was called Permanent Trouble. Mm-hmm. And that's actually what you're in when you're a collector. You are always in a permanent trouble because you never have money enough to buy what you actually want to buy in relation to what you see. Mm-hmm. You always find things. It's always a balance. Okay, I can't buy this because I have to buy that, and so on. So I completely follow him all around, and I could just laugh, but that's pretty interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good title for a book of a collection. Yeah. Yeah. Do you sometimes sell from your collection or
no.
make
no, no? I'm an art collector. I'm not an art seller.
But that's the thing. I think you don't. I mean, you never actually think about selling. I mean, there's of course, you know, art collectors who also sell, but sometimes just to make room, or I don't know why, but there's different reasons. But I sold one artwork for my collection, only one, yeah. And that was a very special thing. It was a very special painting. It was a very special person that bought it, and I was in a very special situation. So all these three things together led to the fact that I sold this work, but this was not to make me a richer man.
No. But I also
it made me a poorer man because the painting is gone.
Yeah, exactly. But I also have sold just maybe one or two pieces, but out of more than 1,000. I mean, so it's.
You know how much art you have? You mean you just
many hundreds, more than 1,000.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they're not all this size, right? They're just so smaller works.
I also have smaller works, but I love bigger works. Yeah. And the trouble with that is that they're filling a lot in the storage. Mm-hmm. But I can't help it. I buy as huge as possible. I have 3.50 meter paintings, you know. Yeah, I actually only have one spot for it. And it's actually up and hanging. I can probably show you later. But I just think, you know, I just can't help it. I mean, somebody is gaming and I'm buying art. I mean, it's like
an addiction.
Yeah.
And you also read about you that you said something interesting. That's the fact that that you believe that art can actually is important for society and how we live together. Do you see, are there any artists specifically that you would point out that are political or change behavior or society, or is it
more? I think there's a lot of art who change who we are or change the society, and it doesn't need to be political art. Mm-hmm. Actually, a lot of political art I disagree with, even if it's good art, because sometimes it's just made to be political. Mm-hmm. So if you can make art that is non-political but change the world anyway, I mean, that makes 10 times more sense than me, because then the politicians can be political, and if you want to be political, you can be together with politicians. You don't need to be an artist to do that. Mm-hmm. But it's also okay that you do it. Mm-hmm. But sometimes, you know, it's a little bit too easy for the artist. Hey, I'm political. Mm-hmm. So now I'm painting a painting with some politicians with a dick in the mouth or something. I mean, that doesn't bring me nothing. It doesn't bring the world nowhere. Mm-hmm. So I'm more into people who think about maybe a humanistic way. There is a Danish Sicilian artist called Marco Ravisti, probably know him. Mm-hmm. He stayed a lot of time in Bangkok. Mm-hmm. And he read in the Bangkok newspaper how many children who died every day in the car in car accidents because there was some special rules in the traffic who was horrible. So what he did, instead of, you know, saying, hey, that's bad, the mayor have to go off, what he did, he went to the family of the children who died in the traffic jams. He got authorization to collect their blood. He painted beautiful pictures from Bangkok with the skyscrapers, and then he put blood on those skyscrapers. And then he made a big exhibition in the gallery in Bangkok. Mm-hmm. And then the mayor came. And then the politicians came. And then there was a huge bang. And then the CIA and then they were there. And then one of a sudden, everybody was agree, they have to change the way you drive in Bangkok.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, in a very silent, in a very neat and very clever way, he managed in a very short time to do something that nobody had focused on for centuries. And that's good art, from my point of view.
Yeah.
Without being political at all.
Yeah, you don't need to write it out, you know, it's just more in a subtle way. I personally think it's that if you are as an artist, if you're aware of your surroundings and of the world, your work is in a way political anyway, you know. So like going there, that's true.
You know, for example, a lot of artists now are getting famous because they're painting Trump. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody knows he's a jackass. I mean, he's stupid in any sense. We don't need to focus on it. I mean, normal people in the world can understand. So leave him alone. I mean, leave him alone.
Yeah.
Don't put him on a pedestal or paint him with a small penis. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. I've been invited 2 years ago when Trump was elected to an exhibition in New York where they invited 45 artists from around the world to make a contribution to an exhibition that deals with Donald Trump. And with and actually, the whole exhibition was a total failure because everyone, all the artists, including myself, took the easy way and used this cartoon-like figure that he is in real life too, but it was such a tight deadline, and I wanted to take part that I messed up completely. I mean, the work is, it looks nice, and actually they sold it too, but it's a little bit embarrassing to look back at that, you know. Then of course it's like it's a learning curve because everything at that point it was still so new and stuff like that. Because in my art, there's always society and there's always politics involved because that's part of my life, you know. I try to bring up my children with an awareness for politics and society and stuff like that. So everything we do is basically already political, and our behaviors, how we buy stuff, you know, avoiding plastic, whatever, all these things. But you don't actually always have to write it out. That's true. I agree.
It's nice to put focus on certain things. It's nice to put focus on that we have too much plastic in the seas. You know, but you don't need to make maybe 200 works on it. I mean, everybody are aware about it, and it's getting more and more aware. And it's better to find a way to actually take it up than just to paint about it or use plastic on a pedestal. You know, but in some places, in some degree, it really makes sense. Mm-hmm. But in a lot of times, I think it doesn't make sense, and it's just for the artist to try to promote himself, and that's what I don't like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand. So, but it's not just, you know, not just the politics. You said something really nice that art can bring people together. So it's also a little bit like a campfire, right? Where people
it is absolutely, and it's not just to bring people together. Mm-hmm. What is even more difficult in these days is to get them to talk, because normally they're just looking at their phone or their iPad or the computer, or they're just with the
headphones
and hearing music. So to get them together and a lot of art can make people talk. Mm-hmm. I had a funny small thing yesterday because when I was for the opening for North, there was a gallery from Silkeborg, Gallery Moderne, who had some beautiful old Josef Beuys.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a person, I mean, he always been one of my heroes. I mean, I think what he did at that time was just freaking brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a lot of pieces. And then, of course, when you are a collector, a lot of people come to you and say, Martin, I have some spare money. I would like to buy some art. Can you show me some good pieces? And I said, yes. His name was Klaus. And I said, Klaus, come on, I have a look. And I showed him a small piece of Beuys, which is just a piece of as a wrapping paper. Mm. You know, he's probably his works with a wrapping paper. And I was serious. I'm dead serious. this is a great piece of art. And he didn't understand, of course, anything. I told him the story about this, how he wrapped the boxes and sent them from East Berlin to West Berlin, and with his friends collecting them and what do you call the people who controlled the packaging?
Customs. Not customs, but.
And they unpacked it, and in the boxes there was nothing. He was just doing it to fuck them off.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he sent out all these boxes, many boxes to his friend, and there was nothing in the boxes.
Yeah.
And they continued to put through radar and stuff because they wanted to check if there was more microfilm or whatever, a spy or whatever.
Yeah.
And there was nothing. It was just a carton box with some wrapping paper, and all this wrapping paper is now art, and which is amazing because his friend he kept all the boxes until the wall came down, and then, you know, that's a super story.
Yeah.
And in the end, he bought the piece, but it took me like half an hour.
So he bought the piece.
Bought the piece.
Okay.
So, you know, I think that's fun, but that's a little bit about the backstory.
Yeah. It's just like interaction is important in that part. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. So Josef Beuys, that's actually a big name. Is your Beuys the biggest name in your collection? You also have Baselitz and stuff like that. You know?
Yeah, if you look at your left, you can see Baselitz. I mean, he of course, I'm not a really rich person, so I'm not a guy who can just collect Baselitz like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But I was able to buy this piece. It took me more than 1 year to buy this piece.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it in Berlin mm-hmm. at a show in CFA. Mm-hmm. And for the first time ever, the show they had was not a selling show. It was a summer show where they have collected a lot of beautiful pieces of works from artists they had in the gallery mm-hmm. and artists they didn't have in the gallery.
Okay.
And it was actually the first theme show that actually, and the title was Kinder. Mm-hmm. So it was all about kids. And I fell in love with this instantly. And I said, sorry, Martin, I know you have been looking for a nice basilisk, not too big. It's all expensive, though.
Sure.
But he's 4 meters, he's 3 meters yeah. high, and you can't have it anywhere. So that was this piece in the right size, and it was right color, with the right tone, with the right everything. I was just, I couldn't leave the gallery. Mm-hmm. And for 6-7 months, the gallerist was trying to persuade Basilis to sell it because it was a part of his own collection.
Okay.
And it was a very special one because it was a small picture he found from himself when he was 7-8 years ago. Okay. So it's actually a self-portrait mm-hmm. when he was a kinder. That's why it was a part of the exhibition. And finally, it seems that Martin is a special collector. He has a special feel about art, and so I will allow him to buy the piece.
Okay.
And then after, we couldn't agree on the money, so it took another 3-4 months to agree on the money. So it actually took a full year to mm-hmm. do this deal. And I, today is that every morning I say hi. it's just hanging there next to my office, and it's amazing. It's amazing. It's
loaded up with a story, storytelling.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that when I came in. Right. It's. Fascinating artist. And you also, Thalea, you got also a couple of pieces I saw coming in.
I do believe I was in for Scandinavia, I don't know for Scandinavia, but for Denmark, I was really the first collector mm-hmm. who could see something in mm-hmm. Tal.
Thalea.
From my point of view, we have been through a certain period in with the Danish artist, a little bit basic. Not really getting over new stuff and stuff so on. Yeah. And then Tal came and nobody understood what the hell was that.
Yeah.
I mean, he in a way, he reinvented Danish mm-hmm. painting in a certain way.
Yeah, okay.
And he's completely own way. And what struck me a lot was when you look at a piece of his paintings, it was like you could just see he didn't do it for money. He didn't do it for show off. He didn't do it to be famous. He did it because he couldn't help it. You could see it was so easy for him to make his works. The painting was just blasting out from the pencil.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's a great, when I can get that feeling from an artist, that means a lot. It's not that he tried very hard. He didn't need to try very hard because he had it in him. And it was just like spraying basically on the canvas with his pencil.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just like, wow. I was blown away. And people was like, I buy this shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't help it. I mean, I get goosebumps. I'm sweating and my heart is beating. It's crazy.
Yeah, okay.
And that was like 94 or something, 96, I think maybe 96. Yeah.
So
that was very, very early in relation to Tal. And I bought him ever since.
Mm.
I'm still buying him. So every time I do new stuff, crazy stuff, going from one side to the other, I have to get some from him.
But are you then also close with many artists? I mean, like, you probably know him quite well.
Of course, Tal, I don't buy art through artists. I always buy art through galleries.
Yeah, but still, I mean, you still have...
I know him. When I go through his... Mm-hmm. in Copenhagen, I have a half an hour, I go to his studio and say hi and get a cup of nice... I always have a very nice mint tea.
Okay.
So we sit there and drink mint tea, talk about the world and the family and dogs and all kinds of stuff.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
And it's crazy. Yeah. It's great.
Yeah.
And I didn't know... I didn't know him when I started buying him.
Mm-hmm.
When you then get to know the artist and they are really, really nice, humble, amazing person, the art pieces are just getting even more beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you buy a piece of art and you meet the artist and he's an asshole.
Yeah.
And the art piece immediately get less worth.
Mm-hmm.
But for Tal and for many, many others, it's the opposite.
Yeah, that's true. But you probably don't know before.
So
when you meet them. So did he show in Aalborg as well? Is anybody representing him?
No, I bought him from... He had a gallerist in Copenhagen at that time. Michael Andersen. Mm-hmm. He was had a gallery in Berlin for some years. Okay. So I bought all the first pieces from him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here, Copenhagen is probably it's also growing, right? The Chart Art Fair is
Chart Art Fair, yeah. And Code.
Yeah. The Code is former Art Copenhagen, right?
Yeah. Yes and no.
Yes and no.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
It had as a Code started a little bit hard, a little bit difficult,
mm-hmm.
but the last two times it had been good, and this time it was a really, really good fair. Okay. I think just as good as Chart.
Yeah.
Really high quality, many nice galleries from Scandinavia, but also from all Europe, Spanish, German, English galleries. It was really, really good selection and a pretty impressive quality.
I think when Art Copenhagen started, it was only Danish galleries
starting
in the beginning, and with William Cobber, we were part in 2015 in one of the first where they opened up to international galleries.
Yeah.
So, but that was still kind of a weird experience for us because we were one of five or six international galleries, and we had the impression that, you know, sort of Danish people liked what they saw but did not buy from the Germans or English and Spanish galleries that were there at the time. They bought, you know, and the galleries they knew, you know, so like needs to be a relationship that you build up, you know, so.
You need to think about that. And and that's not only in Denmark or in Germany, because
no.
I spoke to a lot of galleries in Hong Kong
mm-hmm.
and I said, listen, you're in Hong Kong, you're from Berlin or you're from Hamburg or you're from Spain or you're from London. Do you really sell art here? And they go, yeah, now we do.
Mm-hmm.
But they have been there 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
It's all about consistency, mm-hmm. trust, mm-hmm. Connections, networking, and then one of a sudden, then it all makes sense. But it's about, you know, putting the seeds in the ground, and mm-hmm. then sometimes in the future you're gonna harvest. You cannot just go to a fair, sell it all, and just be happy. It doesn't work like that. Except if you have really, really crazy artists that are amazing and everybody wants. But
it worked for us this way the first times we went to Miami, but we were pretty, you know, different at that time.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, I understand. But then, so your recommendation for a gallery would be not just to try out many, many art fairs, but to find one that suits you and is very well for you, and then just continue doing it.
And to doing it and keep up with good work, mm-hmm. get all a lot of business cards, email to all the contacts. What many galleries do wrong, they're always just sending invites.
Mm-hmm.
And still today, they're just sending invites for the exhibitions. Don't just send a boring invite by email. Mm-hmm. I got 25-30 a day.
Mm-hmm.
Of course. Do I read them? Yeah. Never. They just get deleted. But if all the galleries I know who sent me a PDF
mm-hmm.
with all the works, price, like exhibition standards, everything, so I can actually go into the
mm-hmm.
To the exhibition, because I cannot visit an exhibition in Hamburg just because you open something. Mm-hmm. I need to stay here, but I'm super curious in what you're doing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that would be one of my, you know, because now we don't want to send out, we don't want to send the price list. Why not? I mean, the price is a price list. Let the people understand
this is actually not
expensive. Or if it is expensive, there's a reason why it's expensive. It's because it's good quality.
That's actually also an interesting factor, that price lists are kept like hidden
secret
treasures, but when you go to the gallery, you have a list and you know the prices.
Yeah.
And actually, for both sides, for all the sides, for the gallery, for the artist, and for the client, that's the most important information in the end if you want to make a sale.
You know what? 25 years ago, I met a really smart mm-hmm. American guy. His name was Doc.
Mm-hmm.
Old guy. He was maybe 72 or 73 at that time.
Yeah.
And I said, Doc, you have done amazing stuff. You earn more money than you were ever expecting, and you are still a great person and so on.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell did you do? And I said, Martin, I'm going to tell you. It's not even a secret. Make yourself available.
Mm-hmm.
I go, what? I said, make yourself fucking available. And every time I think about that,
mm-hmm.
you know, in relation to galleries, make yourself available. Don't hide the prices. Why hide the price list? It's not a secret. You can see it on Artsy. You can see it 100 other places.
Yeah, but even on Artsy, a couple of galleries just say contact gallery for price, and I don't
understand
what they
do.
Yeah, you
can do that if it's like a Koons thing or if it's whatever. It's art.
Yeah.
Let the people feel art in any sense, in any way. Let them understand the prices. Mm-hmm. Let them understand. Instead of making it so exclusive that nobody thinks that they can buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's cheap. Maybe they want to spend the money, but they thought they think it's too expensive because they don't want to mention the prices. Mm. That's always normally what you think. If you're a normal consumer, you go into a store, they don't show the prices. You think, shit, this is about my payroll.
Yeah.
You know, so just leave it. Mm-hmm. So send out an invitation. Now we have a show mm-hmm. with this artist. Here are the PDF. Here are for all the works, close-ups, full shots. Mm-hmm. Here's a price list. You know, we're going to continue with the next week because here and there. Mm-hmm. Why not?
Yeah, I think it's important. I mean, we've moved towards artsy in the past. Well, I think we're now in our second year there, because for me it's very convenient because it takes the burden away off from me to put those things online on my own, because they have a good content management system and it's available to everyone. And we actually get a lot of contacts through that. So for me, it's also, you know, sort of all the relevant information that you have to provide to fill that in. Yeah. So it's kind of, you know, basically every intern can do this now.
Yes.
You know, so, and you have the service and convenience to send this out. The only thing where I'm still hesitant, we don't publish artsy before the show opens,
because to be fair to the artist,
and not necessarily just about, because for me, it's still an opening of an art show is an artist work for this, and that's his moment, and that's our moment together.
No, I agree.
But then, sure, you know.
Send it out, let them see it, make the art available.
Yeah.
I mean, art is for everybody. Mm-hmm. It's for everybody. It should be for everybody.
Yeah.
And if you're always trying to keep it or hide it as a secret, it's never going to be, and for no reason.
Yeah, that's true. You also said something interesting earlier. You buy through galleries, which I of course think is the right way to do. But the role of galleries has of course changed over the past years as well a little bit. I think, except for probably, I mean, you know, traditionally, I had this discussion with an artist before in one of these podcasts. Usually, when we started taking on an artist and representing him or her. It took us, we planned at least 3-4 years until we make the first significant movement in the career of the artist, be it sales or be it a great exhibition somewhere else or something like that, because it takes time to work with the person and with the art. And I think these days it's very often that many galleries have hundreds and hundreds of artists, new artists every year, so that this relation cannot be built up. So I fear a little bit that the gallery model has changed a lot by you know, sort of, I think in the early days galleries often were gatekeepers trying to protect this. Then I think it got more and more open. It's the time when people started publishing price lists as well, or said, I don't need to know where you studied, I need to see your work, where other people started to buy into that. I think that's around the time when you started collecting as well, or a little bit later, I think. And now I think there's just oversaturation of new galleries and artists everywhere. So people start to forget that if you don't buy at galleries, they cannot continue to build an artist or a career of an artist. I don't know how you see that, if galleries have changed or if you see that.
I think galleries have changed. And it, where I feel that changed to a little bit negative side is the speed. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't like when I know a young artist, he just came out from the from some kind of art university or something, and he came out and it's like immediately, oh, he's hype and the price is like that. Maybe you should just take it a little bit longer, mm-hmm. you know, let the things to grow a little bit, get some pieces in the right collection, nurse him a little bit. Mm-hmm. But you know what, if a young artist just come out from university and you know, you think like 20 or 25,000 euros for a piece, forget it. What should his price be in 5 years then? Mm-hmm. And you know, we also know that a very few go through the real needle eye to go, you know, to go sky high, like Baselitz or something else. So many galleries don't do themselves or the artist any favors speeding up the process. Mm-hmm. It's like good wine. It takes time, mm-hmm. you know. And right now, many galleries and many artists are rushing the situation. And if they're just going to pay the bill later. Mm. And you see it because one of a sudden, as you say, that the secondary market, they crash. So the artist is 20,000 euros and they go on 3,000 euros on auctions, you know, that's not good karma. So it needs to take time, mm-hmm. and you need to build up things. People need to understand the type of quality and that type of work and so on to adapt that client or that artist into the art world, basically, mm-hmm. and it takes time.
Yeah.
Some German galleries are very good at keeping them in a good state and, you know, building brick by brick. That's how you have to build an artist, brick by brick. Yeah. Not just saying, hey, you're amazing, you're the best I've ever seen, and we can take whatever price you want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just to pee in the pants. Yeah. It will probably be warm for a short time, and then it'll be very, very cold after.
Yeah.
So a gallery like Jan Wentrup in Berlin, mm-hmm. the gallery like Galerie Neu in Berlin, they are super good at that.
Mm-hmm.
And when other people, other galleries who have the same artist are trying to put up the price and say, it's not that art should not be expensive.
It should
just grow in a certain mm-hmm. timing, and I think you just having an ordinary mm-hmm. way to create the situation, and many doesn't, and that's an issue.
Yeah, I think it's got a lot to do with patience, because now everything is readily available at your fingertips yeah. all the time,
yeah.
24/7. You know, people expect also that artists and art develops super quickly, and I can understand the temptation totally. If you're a young artist and you have a nice Instagram profile and there's, you know, a lot of people following you and yeah. liking what you do and coming to yeah. your shows, but that's only a small part of everything, and in the end it all centers around the piece, the work that you're doing, and that can you know, see. I mean, I would say I'm an experienced seasoned artist with yeah. I'm 50 years, turning 51 this year, and basically working as an artist my whole life, doing many, many different jobs in between and stuff, because, you know, sort of life is not just one way.
Yeah.
And I still, you know, sort of like we had this topic with this drum thing, I'm totally fucked up,
yeah.
totally fucked up. Yeah. And that makes the story very interesting maybe as well around this piece, but yeah, you need time, you know, and everything you do, just, you know, especially in art, you need to step back and think about it, because otherwise you only probably also just repeat yourself or, you know, sort of. I think that's a very wise thing to say too, but both sides, artists, galleries and stuff. The thing is, of course, it's easy to say, or it's hard to do when you kind of, you know, have to live off the things you do. So for us these days, it's not as easy as it was a couple of years ago to develop artists over a longer time, but I also have a hard time finding these artists. Yeah. We have one now in our gallery that we're working with for roughly 2 years. And that's something where I think this will be an artist that I would still be working with in 10, 12, 15 years,
yeah.
probably. So, but that's still rare, because, you know, everybody wants to move on so quickly now. And
that's the problem with the world we're living in. Yeah. Everything has to go so fast.
Yeah.
If you get an email, but you have a reply, you will be back in 2 days.
Yeah.
10 minutes after, the guy who sent you the email are calling you and say, you didn't reply to my email I sent 10 minutes ago.
Yeah,
yeah, but how to reply? That'll yeah. be back in 2 days.
Yeah.
So what the hell? Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody expect everything immediately, ASAP.
Mm-hmm.
And that's both good and bad, more bad than good.
Yeah, well, I agree. Yeah, Martin, is there anything we haven't covered, anything you'd still like to say? I mean, we had a couple of parts in the recent minutes where we could always say, okay, that's a nice word to end this podcast.
Yeah.
But I don't know, it's always... I mean, this is more a talk, you know, it's a discussion between two people and not your pure interview. But is there anything that you think you'd still like to say that we haven't covered? Anything? I mean, that would be a nice word too, but we already used the quote, Archer, comfort to disturb and disturb the comfortable. I like that. Is that from whom is that? Who is that by? Is that yours?
I don't, it's not mine. I collected it for Instagram.
Ah, okay.
But it's still cool. I think it's really valid. And the other one next to it, I think, yeah. is also valid. And that goes in any kind of thing mm-hmm. in the world, and not necessarily art, but great things never came from comfort zones.
Yeah.
So it's not that I'm living by that, but again, trying to take things further and be serious with other people and do your best every day. I mean, it's all about that. trying to care about things.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. All right, man. Thank you. Yeah, I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did.
Absolutely. It was cool. Thanks for having me.